This is Plant-Based Briefing. Toxic Superfoods is Toxic Misinformation, Part 1 by Lee Ettinger, MD, at nutritionstudies.org. I'm Marian Erickson, host of this plant-based podcast where I curate and narrate with permission a variety of articles on plant-based and vegan living in about 10 minutes or less every weekday. Today's is longer than that, so it's a two-parter. I'm reading Part 1 today and come back tomorrow for the second half. And I'm pleased to have permission from the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies to share their content. So now let's get to today's plant-based briefing. Toxic Superfoods is Toxic Misinformation, Part 1 by Lee Ettinger, MD, at nutritionstudies.org. When I see a patient with a kidney stone, I typically ask for their dietary history. Sometimes the patient only offers a non-committal response that they eat a balanced diet. But we have a saying in nephrology, the urine does not lie. A particularly memorable urine sample from a petite teenage boy with a painful stone had a tremendous amount of oxalate. I had to know more. With some detective work, I learned that this young man's pediatrician had recommended he supplement his diet with Kind bars to help him grow. If you don't know, Kind bars are full of nuts and dark chocolate, prime delivery agents of oxalate. He was following his pediatrician's advice by eating 4 bars a day. Instead of growing taller, he grew a calcium oxalate kidney stone. Not the desired result at all. Oxalate is a compound made by plants. It delays ripening, prevents decay, and alleviates cold damage. It also binds with calcium, which the plant draws up through its roots from the soil. Calcium is essential for plant growth and development. The combination of oxalate and calcium, calcium oxalate, serves several functions, including ion regulation and defending the plant from insect pests and animals. Humans ingest both calcium and oxalate in our diets, and our livers also make some oxalate. Calcium supports healthy growth, bone structure, nerve conduction, and muscle contraction. Oxalate mostly ends up in the toilet as it binds with calcium in the gut or the bloodstream. WebMD has a helpful list of high oxalate plant foods, which include spinach, soy products, and almonds. Planting an oxalate seed of doubt, toxic superfoods. This system works harmoniously enough for most people. However, when the amount of calcium oxalate in the urine becomes unmanageable, molecules stick together to become crystals that grow into grains that accumulate to form exquisitely painful stones. About 10% of the population will suffer from a kidney stone at some point in their lifetime. But should the rest of us be concerned that oxalate has even more insidious effects? This is the hypothesis proposed by Sally K. Norton, MPH, in her 2023 book, Toxic Superfoods. She suggests that oxalate is a plant-derived toxin, an anti-nutrient, and the cause of just about every human malady except for cardiovascular disease. She does not go there, perhaps because of the overwhelming preponderance of evidence pointing to animal products as the culprit of cardiovascular disease. In this trying-to-be-shocking book, she contends that the foods we have been taught are healthy, like leafy greens and whole grains, are actually toxic bombs of oxalate that, separate from the possibility of causing dreaded kidney stones, wreak havoc on our insides. Norton argues that, like death by a million cuts, oxalates bind other nutrients, trigger inflammation, and stress our cells. Her case against eating plants relies heavily on anecdotal stories, as well as some observational and interventional study results. I found her referencing style frustrating. There are no footnotes or citations in the text. Instead, she organizes endnotes at the back of the book by page, number, and phrase. So a sweeping, damning conclusion about oxalates may turn out, after much page flipping, to be from a scientific study, a personal blog, or no reference at all. For a 276-page book that makes such bold claims and contradicts decades of research, I might have expected more than a meager 270 endnotes, many of which are anecdotal. Anecdotes are great for sharing a message. I started this article with a patient's story, and I plan to incorporate 2 more. But anecdotes are considered weak evidence for making health-based decisions. In my opinion, this book is full of such flimsy substantiation. I didn't do a tally, but it seems that most of her references come from the low end of the evidence quality pyramid, pictured below. The diagram of the evidence quality pyramid shows the lowest quality type of evidence at the bottom and the highest quality at the top. The lowest quality of evidence at the bottom of the pyramid being animal and laboratory studies, and case reports or case series, narrative reviews, expert opinions, and editorials. Observational studies and primary studies are higher up on the quality pyramid, with case control studies, cohort studies, and randomized controlled trials being in the middle, and at the top end of the evidence quality pyramid are meta-analysis, systematic reviews, and clinical practice guidelines. She even admits in Chapter 7, titled A Confusing Multitude of Symptoms and No Good Tests, that there is a lack of scientific support for her theories about oxalate. More on that shortly. The dose makes the poison, legitimate oxalate crises. I know very well what acute oxalate poisoning looks like. When a tween girl landed in my pediatric intensive care unit after drinking antifreeze in reaction to a dramatic breakup with her boyfriend, she showed signs of neurotoxicity, slurred speech, abnormal eye movements, confusion from the rush of ethylene glycol. She dodged the arrhythmias, respiratory distress, muscle spasms, and renal damage that may occur as that compound is metabolized to an internal flood of oxalate that binds up vital calcium and invades the kidney. In this book, Ms. Norton postulates that daily low-level oxalate exposure can cause chronic low-level internal harm, leading to bloating, constipation, diarrhea, low energy, weight issues, slow healing, cold hands and feet, rashes, allergies, hot flashes, blood pressure irregularity, sore feet, swelling, sun sensitivity, watery eyes, painful intercourse, incontinence, etc. Again, her evidence is anecdotal. She claims people have written to her that such symptoms seem to resolve soon after adopting her low oxalate diet. There are several challenges with trying to pin the blame on oxalate for all of these symptoms. There are not any good sources or methods to accurately count how much oxalate is in any given plant food. You cannot find it on the package label. It can vary from one leaf to the next. People poop out varying amounts of the oxalate they eat depending on how much of the bacteria, Oxalobacter firminges, they have in their gut microbiome. This bacteria degrades ingested oxalate right in the colon and impacts absorption significantly. Blood tests to measure oxalate levels are unreliable because oxalate can disappear from the blood quickly, even after an oxalate-heavy meal, and most people are fasting when tested. Though they may appear in invasive biopsies, oxalate crystals do not show up in imaging studies, and urine oxalate levels go down as a person progresses into kidney failure, hiding the potential cause of their disease. In short, there is no reliable non-invasive method to track oxalate to confirm whether it might be the cause of the numerous symptoms documented in the book. That said, there are legitimate cases of chronic oxalate toxicity. As a pediatric kidney doctor, I was on the team caring for a young girl with primary hyperoxaluria. She had a very rare genetic defect that caused her liver to pump oxalate continuously into the bloodstream from birth. This constant flow of oxalate soaked up so much bone-fortifying calcium that her leg broke from a tiny toddler tumble. As expected, she progressed to renal failure as her kidney filters clogged up with calcium oxalate sand. A combined liver-kidney transplant cured her malfunctioning liver and replaced her fossilized kidneys, so this extreme story had a happy ending. Norton proposes that chronic oxalate ingestion is causing unhappiness for many people in the form of secondary hyperoxaluria. She suggests the mechanisms of action, but in my opinion, the associations between oxalate and these vague complaints are often weak. My patient had a very rare defect, confirmed by genetic diagnosis. Individuals hoping to prove that their non-specific symptoms are due to oxalate have untestable speculation. You just listened to Toxic Superfoods is Toxic Misinformation, Part 1 by Lee Ettinger, MD at nutritionstudies.org. And I'm your host, Marian Erickson. Tune in tomorrow for the second half of this post, where you'll hear about how decades of research has been ignored in this book, how symptoms may worsen if you go on a low oxalate diet, and when to actually avoid high oxalate foods. So please share this episode with anyone who might benefit, and thanks for listening.